"That's such a remarkably well-trained beast, Vin," he said. "I don't think I've ever seen one quite like it."
"Does he know?" Vin wondered with alarm. "Would one chondra be able to recognize another in a dog's body?" "No, that couldn't be. Otherwise, Orsure could find the imposter for her." So she simply smiled again, patting Orsure's head.
"There is a trainer in the market. He teaches wolfhounds to be protective, to stay with young children and keep them out of danger."
Dachshund nodded.
"So, any purpose to this visit?"
Vin shrugged.
"We never chat anymore, Dox."
Dachshund sat back in his chair.
"This might not be the best time for chatting. I have to prepare the royal finances to be taken over by someone else, should the vote go against Elend."
"Would a chondra be able to do the ledgers?" Vin wondered. "Yes, they'd have known. They'd have been prepared."
"I'm sorry," Vin said. "I don't mean to bother you, but Elend has been so busy lately and says it has his project." "It's all right," Dachshund said. "I can spare a few minutes. What's on your mind?" "Well, do you remember that conversation we had back before the collapse?"
Dachshund frowned.
"Which one?" "You know, the one about your childhood."
"Oh," Dachshund said, nodding.
"Yes. What about it?"
"Well, do you still think the same way?"
Dachshund paused thoughtfully, fingers slowly tapping on the desktop. Vin waited, trying not to show her tension. The conversation in question had been between the two of them, and during it, Dachshund had first spoken to her of how much he'd hated the nobility.
"I suppose I don't," Dachshund said. "Not anymore. Kill always said that you gave the nobility too much credit, Vin. But you started to change even him there at the end. No, I don't think that noble society needs to be completely destroyed. They aren't all monsters, as once presumed."
Vin relaxed. He not only knew the conversation, he knew the details of the tangents they'd discussed. She had been the only one there with him. That had to mean that he wasn't the chondra, right?
"This is about Elend, isn't it?" Dachshund asked.
Vin shrugged.
"I suppose. I know that you wish he and I could get along better, Vin. But all things considered, I think we're doing pretty well. He's a decent man. I can acknowledge that. He has some faults as a leader. He lacks boldness. Lacks presence."
"Not like Kelsier."
"But," Dachshund continued, "I don't want to see him lose his throne. He has treated the Ska fairly for a nobleman."
"He's a good person, Dox," Vin said quietly.
Dachshund looked away.
"I know that. But, well, every time I talk to him, I see Kelsier standing over his shoulder shaking his head at me. Do you know how long Kel and I dreamed of toppling the Lord Ruler? The other crew members, they thought Kelsier's plan was a newfound passion, something that came to him in the pits. But it was older than that, Vin. Far older. We always hated the nobility, Kel and I. When we were youths, planning our first jobs, we wanted to be rich. But we also wanted to hurt them. Hurt them for taking from us things they had no right to. My love. Kelsier's mother. Every coin we stole, every nobleman we left dead in an alleyway. This was our way of waging war. Our way of punishing them."
Vin sat quietly. It was these kinds of stories, these memories of a haunted past, that had always made her just a little uncomfortable with Kelsier, and with the person he had been training her to become. It was this sentiment that gave her pause, even when her instincts whispered that she should go and exact retribution on Straffan Set with knives in the night. Dachshund held some of that same hardness. Kel and Dox weren't evil men, but there was an edge of vengefulness to them. Oppression had changed them in ways that no amount of peace, reformation, or recompense could redeem. Dachshund shook his head.
"And we put one of them on the throne. I can't help but think that Curl would be angry with me for letting Elend rule, no matter how good a man he is.
Kelsier changed at the end, Vin said quietly. You said it yourself, Dox.
Do you know that he saved Ellen's life?
Doxon turned, frowning.
When?
On that last day, Vin said. During the fight with the Inquisitor. Kel protected Ellen, who came looking for me.
Must have thought he was one of the prisoners.
Vin shook her head. He knew who Ellen was, and knew that I loved him. In the end, Kelsier was willing to admit that a good man was worth protecting no matter who his parents were.
I find that hard to accept, Vin.
Why?
Doxon met her eyes. Because if I accept that Elend bears no guilt for what his people did to mine, then I must admit to being a monster for the things that I did to them.
Vin shivered. In those eyes, she saw the truth behind Doxon's transformation. She saw the death of his laughter. She saw the guilt. The murders.
This man is no imposter.
I can find little joy in this government, Vin, Doxon said quietly, because I know what we did to create it. The thing is, I'd do it all again. I tell myself it's because I believe in Scar freedom. I still lie awake at nights, however, quietly satisfied for what we've done to our former rulers. Their society undermined. Their god dead. Now they know.
Vin nodded. Doxon looked down as if ashamed, an emotion she had rarely seen in him. There didn't seem to be anything else to say. Doxon sat quietly as she withdrew, his pen and ledger forgotten on the desktop.
It's not him,
Vin said, walking down an empty palace hallway, trying to shake the haunting sound of Doxon's voice from behind her.
You are certain, mistress? Orsier asked.
Vin nodded.
He knew about a private conversation that Doxon and I had before the collapse.
Orsier was silent for a moment.
Mistress, he finally said, my brethren can be very thorough.
Yes, but how could he have known about such an event?
We often interview people before we take their bones, mistress,
Orsier explained.
We'll meet them several times in different settings and find ways to talk about their lives. We'll also talk to their friends and acquaintances. Did you ever tell anyone about this conversation you had with Doxon?
Vin stopped to lean against the side of the stone hallway.
Maybe Elend, she admitted. I think I mentioned it to Sazed, too, just after it happened. That was almost 2 years ago.
That could have been enough, mistress, Orsier said. We cannot learn everything about a person, but we try our best to discover items like this. Private conversations, secrets, confidential information, so that we can mention them at appropriate times and reinforce our illusion.
Vin frowned.
There are other things as well, mistress, Orsier said. I hesitate because I do not wish to imagine your friends in pain. However, it is common for our master, the one who actually does the killing, to torture their victim for information.
Vin closed her eyes. Doxon felt so real. His guilt, his reactions. That couldn't be faked, could it?
Damn,
she whispered quietly, opening her eyes. She turned, sighing as she pushed open the shutters of a hallway window. It was dark out, and the mists curled before her as she leaned against the stone windowsill and looked out at the courtyard 2 stories below.
Dox isn't an allomancer, she said. How can I find out for certain if he's the imposter or not?
I do not know, mistress, Orsier said. This is never an easy task.
Vin stood quietly. Absently, she pulled on her bronze earring, her mother's earring, and worked it between her fingers, watching it reflect light. It had once been gilded with silver, but that had worn off in most places.
I hate this,
she finally whispered. What, mistress? This distrust, she said. I hate being suspicious of my friends. I thought I was through mistrusting those around me. I feel like a knife is twisting inside of me, and it cuts deeper every time I confront one of the crew. Orsure sat on his haunches beside her, and he cocked his head. But, mistress, you've managed to eliminate several of them as impostors.
Yes, Vin said.
But that only narrows the field. Brings me one step closer to knowing which one of them is dead.
And that knowledge isn't a good thing?
Vin shook her head. I don't want it to be any of them, Orsure. I don't want to distrust them. Don't want to find out that we're right.
Orsure didn't respond at first, leaving her to stare out the window, mists slowly streaming to the floor around her.
You are sincere, Orsure finally said.
She turned.
Of course I am. I am sorry, mistress, Orsure said. I did not wish to be insulting. I just... Well, I have been Khandra to many masters. So many of them are suspicious and hateful of everyone around them, I had begun to think that your kind lacked the capacity for trust.
That's silly, Vin said, turning back to the window.
I know it is, Orsure said. But people often believe silly things, if given enough proof. Either way, I apologize. I do not know which of your friends is dead, but I am sorry that one of my kind brought you this pain.
Whoever he is, he's just following his contract.
Yes, mistress, Orsure said. The contract.
Vin frowned. Is there a way that you could find out which Khandra has a contract in Luthadel?
I'm sorry, mistress, Orsure said. That is not possible.
I figured as much, she said. Are you likely to know him, whoever he is?
The Khandra are a close-knit group, mistress, Orsure said, and our numbers are small. There is a good chance that I know him quite well.
Vin tapped her finger against the windowsill, frowning as she tried to decide if the information was useful.
I still don't think it's Doxin, she finally said, replacing the earring. We'll ignore him for now. If I can't get any other leads, we'll come back.
She trailed off as something caught her attention. A figure walking in the courtyard, bearing no light.
Ham, she thought, but the walk wasn't right.
She pushed on the shield of the lamp hanging on the wall a short distance away. It snapped closed, the lamp shaking as the hallway fell into darkness.
Mistress?
Orsure asked as Vin climbed up into the window, flaring her tin as she squinted into the night.
Definitely not Ham, she thought.
Her first thought was of Elend, a sudden terror that assassins had come while she was talking to Doxin. But it was early in the night, and Elend would still be speaking with his counselors. It was an unlikely time for an assassination.
And only one man? Not Zane, not judging from the height.
Probably just a guard, Vin thought. Why do I have to be so paranoid all the time?
And yet, she watched the figure walking into the courtyard, and her instincts kicked in. He seemed to be moving suspiciously, as if he were uncomfortable, as if he didn't want to be seen.
In my arms, she said to Orsure, tossing a padded coin out the window.
He hopped up obligingly, and she leaped out the window, fell 25 feet, and landed with the coin. She released Orsure and nodded into the mists. He followed closely as she moved into the darkness, stooping and hiding, trying to get a good look at the lone figure. The man walked briskly, moving toward the side of the palace where the servants' entrances were. As he passed, she finally saw his face.
Captain Demu, she thought.
She sat back, crouching with Orsure beside a small stack of wooden supply boxes. What did she really know of Demu?
He was one of the Ska rebels recruited by Kelsier almost 2 years before. He'd taken to command, and had been promoted quickly. He was one of the loyal men who had stayed behind when the rest of the army had followed Yidden to their doom. After the collapse, he'd stayed in with the crew, eventually becoming Ham's second. He had received no small amount of training from Ham, which might explain why he'd go out at night without a torch or lantern. But even so, if I were going to replace someone on the crew, Finn thought, I wouldn't pick an allomancer. That would make the imposter too easy to spot. I'd pick someone ordinary, someone who wouldn't have to make decisions or attract notice. Someone close to the crew, but not necessarily on it. Someone who was always near important meetings, but someone that others don't really know that well. She felt a small thrill. If the imposter were Damu, it would mean that one of her good friends hadn't been killed. And it would mean that the Chandra's master was even smarter than she'd given him credit for being. He rounded the keep, and she followed quietly. However, whatever he'd been doing this night, it was already completed, for he moved in through one of the entrances on the side of the building, greeting the guards posted there to watch. Vin sat back in the shadows. He'd spoken to the guards, so he hadn't snuck out of the palace. And yet, she recognized the stooped posture, the nervous movements. He'd been nervous about something. "That's him," she thought. "The spy." But now, what should she do about it?
"There was a place for me in the lore of the Anticipation. I thought myself the announcer, the prophet foretold to discover the Hero of Ages. Renouncing Elendi, then, would have been to renounce my new position, my acceptance by the others. And so I did not."
34. "That won't work," Elend said, shaking his head. "We need a unanimous decision, minus the person being ousted, of course, in order to depose a member of the Assembly. We'd never manage to vote out all 8 merchants." Ham looked a bit deflated. Elend knew that Ham liked to consider himself a philosopher. Indeed, Ham had a good mind for abstract thinking. However, he wasn't a scholar. He liked to think up questions and answers, but he didn't have experience studying a text in detail, searching out its meaning and implications. Elend glanced at Sazed, who sat with a book open on the table before him. The keeper had at least 12 volumes stacked around him, though amusingly his stacks were neatly arranged, spines pointing the same direction, covers flush. Ellen's own stacks were characteristically haphazard, pages of notes sticking out at odd angles. It was amazing how many books one could fit into a room, assuming one didn't want to move around very much. Ham sat on the floor, a small pile of books beside him, though he spent most of his time voicing one random idea or another. Tyndall had a chair and did not study. The Terrace woman found it perfectly acceptable to train Elend as a king, however she refused to research and give suggestions about keeping his throne. This seemed, in her eyes, to cross some unseen line between being an educator and a political force. "Good thing Sazed isn't like that," Elend thought. "If he were, the Lord Ruler might still be in charge. In fact, Vin and I would probably both be dead. Sazed was the one who actually rescued her when she was imprisoned by the Inquisitors. It wasn't me." He didn't like to think about that event. His bungled attempt at rescuing Vin now seemed a metaphor for all he had done wrong in his life. He'd always been well-intentioned, but he'd rarely been able to deliver. That was going to change.
"What about this, Your Majesty?"
The one who spoke was the only other person in the room, a scholar named Nurdin. Elend tried to ignore the intricate tattoos around the man's eyes, indications of Nurdin's former life as an obligator. He wore large spectacles to try to hide the tattoos, but he had once been relatively well-placed in the Steel Ministry. He could renounce his beliefs, but the tattoos would always remain.
"What have you found?" Elend asked.
"Some information on Lord Set, Your Majesty," Nordin said. "I found it in one of the ledgers you took from the Lord Ruler's palace. It seems Set isn't as indifferent to Luthadel politics as he'd like us to think."
Nordin chuckled to himself at the thought. Elend had never met a cheerful obligator before. Perhaps that was why Nordin hadn't left the city like most of his kind. He certainly didn't seem to fit into their ranks. He was only one of several men that Elend had been able to find to act as scribes and bureaucrats in his new kingdom. Elend scanned Nordin's page. Though the page was filled with numbers rather than words, his scholar's mind easily parsed the information. Set had done a lot of trading with Luthadel. Most of his work had been done using lesser houses as fronts. That might have fooled noblemen, but not the obligators, who had to be informed of the terms of any deal. Nordin passed the ledger over to Sazed, who scanned the numbers.
"So," Nordin said, "Lord Set wanted to appear unconnected to Luthadel, the beard and the attitude only serving to reinforce that impression. Yet he always had a very quiet hand in things here."
Elend nodded. "Maybe he realized that you can't avoid politics by pretending you're not part of them. There's no way he would have been able to grab as much power as he did without some solid political connections."
"So what does this tell us?" Sazed asked.
"That Set is far more accomplished at the game than he wants people to believe," Elend said, standing, then stepping over a pile of books as he made his way back to his chair. "But I think that much was obvious by the way he manipulated me and the assembly yesterday." Nordin chuckled.
"You should have seen the way you all looked, Your Majesty. When Set revealed himself, a few of the noble assemblymen actually jumped in their seats. I think the rest of you were too shocked to..."
"Nordin," Elend said.
"Yes, Your Majesty."
"Please focus on the task at hand."
Yes, Your Majesty."
"Sazed," Elend asked, "what do you think?" Sazed looked up from his book, a codified and annotated version of the city's charter as written by Elend himself. The terraceman shook his head.
"You did a very good job with this, I think. I can see very few methods of preventing Lord Set's appointment, should the assembly choose him."
"Too competent for your own good?" Nordin said.
"A problem which, unfortunately, I've rarely had," Elend said, sitting and rubbing his eyes. "Is this how Vin feels all the time?" he wondered. She got less sleep than he, and she was always moving about, running, fighting, spying. Yet she always seemed fresh. Elend was beginning to droop after just a couple of days of hard study.
"Focus," he told himself. "You have to know your enemies so that you can fight them. There has to be a way out of this."
Doxson was still composing letters to the other assemblymen. Elend wanted to meet with those who were willing. Unfortunately, he had a feeling that number would be small. They had voted him out, and now they had been presented with an option that seemed an easy way out of their problems.
"Your Majesty," Nordin said slowly, "do you think, maybe, that we should just let Set take the throne? I mean, how bad could he be?"
Elend stopped. One of the reasons he employed the former obligator was because of Nordin's different viewpoint. He wasn't a ska, nor was he a high nobleman. He wasn't a thief. He was just a scholarly little man who had joined the ministry because it had offered an option other than becoming a merchant. To him, the Lord Ruler's death had been a catastrophe that had destroyed his entire way of life. He wasn't a bad man, but he had no real understanding of the plight of the ska. "What do you think of the laws I've made, Nordin?" Elend asked.
"They're brilliant, Your Majesty," Nordin said. "Keen representations of the ideals spoken of by old philosophers, along with a strong element of modern realism."
"Will Set respect these laws?" Elend asked.
"I don't know. I haven't ever really met the man."
"What do your instincts tell you?" Nordin hesitated.
"No," he finally said. "He isn't the type of man who rules by law. He just does what he wants.
He would only bring chaos, Ellen said. Look at the information we have from his homeland and the places he's conquered. They are in turmoil. He's left a patchwork of half-alliances and promises, threats of invasion acting as the thread that barely holds it all together. Giving him rule of Luthadel would just set us up for another collapse. Norden scratched his cheek, then nodded thoughtfully and turned back to his reading.
I can convince him, Ellen thought. If only I could do the same for the Assemblyman.
But Norden was a scholar. He thought the way Ellen did. Logical facts were enough for him, and a promise of stability was more powerful than one of wealth. The Assembly was a different beast entirely. The noblemen wanted a return to what they'd known before, the merchants saw an opportunity to grab the titles they'd always envied, and the Ska were simply worried about a brutal slaughter. And yet even those were generalizations. Lord Penrod saw himself as the city's patriarch, the ranking nobleman, the one who needed to bring a measure of conservative temperance to their problems. Kinneler, one of the steel workers, was worried that the central dominance needed a kinship with the kingdoms around it, and saw an alliance with Set as the best way to protect Luthadel in the long run. Each of the 23 assemblymen had their own thoughts, goals, and problems. That was what Elland had intended. Ideas proliferated in such an environment. He just hadn't expected so many of their ideas to contradict his own.
You were right, Ham, Ellen said, turning.
Ham looked up, raising an eyebrow.
At the beginning of this all, you and the others wanted to make an alliance with one of the armies. Give them the city in exchange for keeping it safe from the other armies.
I remember, Ham said.
Well, that's what the people want, Ellen said. With or without my consent, it appears they're going to give the city to Set. We should have just gone with your plan.
Your Majesty, Sazed asked quietly.
Yes?
My apologies, but it is not your duty to do what the people want.
Ellen blinked. You sound like Tyndall.
I have known few people as wise as she, your Majesty, Sazed said, glancing at her.
Well, I disagree with both of you, Ellen said. A ruler should only lead by the consent of the people he rules.
I do not disagree with that, Your Majesty, Sazed said. Or at least, I do believe in the theory of it. Regardless, I still do not believe that your duty is to do as the people wish. Your duty is to lead as best you can, following the dictates of your conscience. You must be true, Your Majesty, to the man you wish to become. If that man is not whom the people wish to have lead them, then they will choose someone else.
Ellen paused.
Well, of course. If I shouldn't be an exception to my own laws, I shouldn't be an exception to my own ethics either.
Sazed's words were really just a rephrasing of things Tyndall had said about trusting oneself, but Sazed's explanation seemed a better one. A more honest one.
Trying to guess what people wish of you will only lead to chaos, I think, Sazed said. You cannot please them all, Ellen Venture.
The study's small ventilation window bumped open, and Vin squeezed through, pulling in a puff of mist behind her. She closed the window, then surveyed the room.
More? She asked incredulously. You found more books?
Of course, Ellen said.
How many of those things have people written? She asked with exasperation.
Ellen opened his mouth, then paused as he saw the twinkle in her eye. Finally, he just sighed.
You're hopeless, he said, turning back to his letters.
He heard rustling from behind, and a moment later, Vin landed on one of his stacks of books, somehow managing to balance atop it. Her mist cloak tassels hung down around her, smudging the ink on his letter. Ellen sighed.
Oops, Vin said, pulling back the mist cloak. Sorry.
Is it really necessary to leap around like that all the time, Vin? Ellen asked.
Vin jumped down.
Sorry, she repeated, biting her lip.
Sayset says it's because Mistborn like to be up high, so we can see everything that's going on.
Elend nodded, continuing the letter. He preferred them to be in his own hand, but he'd need to have a scribe rewrite this one. He shook his head.
So much to do.